pay back for round two.
Yeah.
In the backyard.
Another backyard edition of All Good and Brotherhood.
Yes, we're just hitting hard today. Trying to crank these out.
Exactly.
But quantity still means there are quality here. So.
Yeah. We hope. We can only hope. That's for the fans to decide.
Yes, we can only hope.
Yeah. So, we wanted to talk about a pressing issue. Well, it's not actually new at this point.
Yeah, not quite.
It's been, like, people heard about it weeks ago. But there's a whole incident at the opening ceremony of the Olympics. And so, we wanted to do a little episode about that. Not so much reacting to it, because, again, it's old news at this point.
Yes.
But maybe looking at what could be some takeaways about that we can learn from that incident of blasphemy. And takeaways as far as how we could better approach our reverence for the Eucharist and for the Last Supper, because ultimately that's what it was. It was a mockery of the Eucharist.
Yes.
How we could better approach devotion to that and what we can learn from that about the general state of the world.
Well, and for all those naysayers who are saying like, oh, well, it was just a great representation of the Feast of Dionysus. The Olympic Committee came out with a formal apology themselves saying they did not stand for it and they regret the mockery of Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
So they're one. Now, can you say, oh, well, it was supposed to be a Feast of Dionysius? Sure, they can present it as that. And maybe that was even like the whole thing. But it was the Feast of Dionysius as a like forced mockery or clear, like, you know, malicious representation of the Last Supper.
Exactly.
So,
and one of the artists even admitted that briefly on Twitter, I think.
Yeah.
And then, like, only a few hours later, she took down her tweet, but it was clear.
Yeah. So for all those people that are like,
we can lay those disputes to rest.
I don't know. So, yeah. Since it's been confirmed, it's clearly, something sacrilegious.
Mm-hmm.
Something
blasphemous.
Yeah. How to respond? Should we be responding? What does that mean? So, since you wanted to talk about this first, why don't you go ahead?
Well, I had three, I guess, initial thoughts just about how we should react to that sort of thing. Because a lot of people were shocked. Many Catholics were shocked and, like, blown away and appalled, which in some sense is good. It's good for us to be deeply troubled by something sinful. But in a sense, I don't think we should actually be shocked that this happened for three reasons. So, first of all, in some of this, I was a little bit inspired by, I was watching a video by Father Mike Schmitz commenting on this, and he was kind of saying something similar, where he's like, we almost shouldn't be surprised.
Mm-hmm.
But there are kind of three reasons that struck me. So, first of all, in a very broad sense, we need to keep in mind that the world is going to mock Christianity.
Yeah.
That's just how it is. And Christ said, you know, this world, if the world hates you, know that it hated me before you.
Yes.
And so, and also Christ refers multiple times throughout the Gospels to the prince of this world or the ruler of this world. And he's not talking about himself. He's not talking about God. He's talking about Satan.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of the world in kind of the spiritual sense of the term, the world, belongs to Satan. You know, it's we're kind of under his domain. And even though we as a church and as Catholics are trying to progress and work our way towards heaven, we have to realize we're traveling through enemy territory. And so we shouldn't be surprised if the institutions that we hold sacred are going to be mocked by the world. So that's one thing. But secondly, particularly zooming in from the world in general to France, a lot of people have been saying, oh, France is the eldest daughter of the church. That's what she's traditionally been called. Mm-hmm. And now look what she's doing. Well, France kind of stopped being the eldest daughter of the church like 200 years ago in the French Revolution. She kind of renounced her mother church when she, you know, went around slaughtering nuns and priests and all kinds of Catholics and opposing any form of piety to God.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, she disowned herself as a former eldest daughter of the church 200 years ago. That's old news. This is not a recent development. France has been impious and a blasphemous nation for centuries. So we shouldn't be surprised by that. But then thirdly, I was just thinking about particularly where we are right now as a church and as people living in this world, where we are in this present age. We kind of don't have a right anymore to be shocked if we see people mocking the Eucharist, because we Catholics at this point don't actually have enough devotion to the Eucharist anymore. For the past 60 years or so, devotion and zeal for the Eucharist has plummeted.
Mm-hmm.
Belief in the real presence of the Eucharist has plummeted.
Yes.
You know, there's that poll nowadays.
I think 2019 Pew Research Center did a study on the belief of Catholics in the real presence, and in the United States specifically, but the numbers are pretty much the same in Europe too, or even worse. And that's less than 33%. It's like 31.5% mm-hmm. of Catholics
so believe in the real presence. Catholics believe
and what's presence. Funny, and so that's the percentage you get. But what's funny is about 4 or 5% of those believe in the real presence, but they don't actually believe that that's what the church teaches. They say
so
this is Jesus, but I don't even know what the church teaches, but I still believe it's Jesus.
Right.
And there's a solid percentage, and it was like, I don't know, another quarter or 30, knows what the church teaches, but refuses to believe
so
it.
So that's active heresy. That's
and then another
heresy.
Third is they don't know what the church believes, and they don't believe it mm-hmm. either. So, which is like, yeah.
So the point is, pretty disappointing survey.
Yes.
And, you know, even, I mean, that's itself is, I guess, the sin of lack of faith and indifference to the Eucharist. But in addition to that, there's so much sacrilege even within our church. I mean, you think about, take your average parish somewhere, probably many of the people, most of the people that go there on Sunday are receiving communion, right?
Mm-hmm.
Very few are going probably to the Saturday afternoon confession that parish offers. You know, most parishes offer
yes.
a small slot for confession, like one day out of the week.
Mm-hmm.
And there's normally maybe if you visit them, maybe 3 or 4 people in line. And then the next day there's hundreds of people receiving communion at Sunday Mass. And not to be cynical, probably a large number of those people are not in the state of grace.
Yeah.
And whether they realize it or not, then they're receiving communion unworthily. So if we as Catholics are regularly committing sacrilege, whether we know it or not, then how much worse is the non-Catholic world, the non-Christian world,
mm-hmm.
going to blaspheme and commit sacrilege? So I don't know, because of all those reasons, it's yeah. like we can be
Why are we
indignant
shocked?
At the fact that our Lord was blasphemed, but we should not be shocked, because this is kind of natural in a way.
Yeah, and that reminds me of a quote I heard once that, like, all the problems in the world are the fault of bad Catholics.
Absolutely.
So that if we see sin rampant, particularly in places that should be, like, good and holy places like France.
Like France.
Then it's not just the world to blame, like, as if we're, like, we're, you know, can stand off on the side and be like, well, that's how the world is, that's how all those people are. It's like,
yeah.
well, the world is the way it is when Christians don't live up to their calling.
Absolutely.
Right? There will always be, yes, like you said, the prince of darkness. So there will always be those Roman empires, those mm-hmm. Mongolian empires, mm-hmm. or the Ottomans, whatever, that persecute us.
Sure.
But when you stand strong, that's why they're being persecuted, right? Mm-hmm. When Catholics and Christians stand strong, then those who see it as like, oh, wow, you're ushering a kingdom or a god or someone who's not earthly, then we have to squash it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're not standing up, then yeah, go ahead. Do your own thing. You're not a threat.
Exactly.
You're just as worldly as us.
We've allowed them to disrespect the Eucharist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to your point about, like, you know, so many people probably just, like, yeah, mind-numbingly going to communion,
mm-hmm.
Having committed sin, some of them not knowing that going to communion in a state of sin is sacrilegious.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them maybe, and they don't care.
But even if they don't know, they might not be culpable, but it's still objectively
yes,
a
sure.
sin and a sacrilege.
A connection that you made is like, well, you know, they probably didn't go to the Saturday confession, right?
Mm-hmm.
Increase the number of confessions mm-hmm. in a week in a parish, and you will increase reverence for the Eucharist.
Absolutely.
And as I've seen that very clearly at St. Vincent, because back, I guess, was the year of mercy in 2015? I think that's when it was.
Yes.
St. Vincent started doing daily confessions mm-hmm. twice a day.
That's beautiful.
In the mornings before Mass,
yeah.
and then in the afternoon from noon to 1. And they're originally going to just do it for the Year of Mercy.
Mm-hmm.
But so many people would come every single day
mm-hmm.
that we've done it since. And I've seen, like, I'll go through the Basilica either on my holy hour or just walking through, you know, around 12:30 on the way to class and just, like, genuflect the tabernacle. Any day of the week, it doesn't matter. There is like 15 to 20 people in line mm-hmm. every day.
Mm-hmm.
And I see like the spirituality, the life, and the reverence of that parish
mm-hmm.
is very clear and it's
yeah.
tangible.
Mm-hmm.
And the people, I mean, there's the monastery too, which certainly helps. But the people are more on fire and more hungry for adoration
mm-hmm.
than, you know, they were.
Right.
And I think if you increase the sacrament of confession, you show it as a priority to people. Like, look, we're having more of this because you need God's mercy. We all need God's mercy.
Mm-hmm.
Why do we need God's mercy? Because we're sinners. What does sin cause us to do? Oh, like, lead lives that are contrary to the gospel. We become indifferent to God's mercy. And we receive communion unworthily.
Yeah.
All of those things start being reminders. So,
mm-hmm.
And I know that more priests who are ordained now desire to have more confession. So mm-hmm. I seeing this as a revitalization yes. definitely is the case. Sure. But there is the kind of this spot in between mm-hmm. of, you know, and I'm not calling any particular priest out that I know. Just it's just like a trend.
Sort
I've
of
seen.
A generation though.
Like if you go on parish websites or bulletins, it says like confession time, Saturday, 3:30 to 4:15. You don't even get an hour.
Exactly.
Like no one's going to come on Saturdays. No. If the priest doesn't make it look like priority, neither will the people.
Exactly.
And then if the people don't, then...
And if people don't think confession's priority, then they're not going to take active steps to prepare for communion the next day.
Exactly.
Because that's the thing is, like, by extreme contrast, this one church I went to, and it was a Trinity Latin Mass church, or traditional Latin Mass church, they had confessions going on during the Mass. So they had Mass going on, and then in the back of the church, they had a confession line going like around the back half of the church leading mm-hmm. into the confessional. Now, you can only do that in a place where you have at least two priests available,
right,
so
yeah,
I understand not all places can do that. But still, if you can do that, that's amazing because then everybody, for one thing, if, say, you go to church and you're not prepared but you're not really thinking about it, well, as soon as you see the people lining up for confession, like, right before or during Mass, you're like, oh, wow, wait, I wonder if I'm prepared. And then you think, maybe I'm not prepared to receive communion. So then you just hop in line.
Yeah.
Go through confession. By the time you're out of confession, it's almost time for communion. You're good to go. And like...
Does that work? Like
you're hearing the Mass the whole time.
Okay, so that does... I've always wondered about that. It seems kind of strange to me
it
to
seems
be going
a little
to confession
strange.
While Mass is going on.
It seems strange.
If you're planning on receiving communion.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I mean, for one thing, at traditional Latin Mass, the devotion or the way
yeah.
in which the faithful are expressing the devotion is a little different. Like they'll be praying
listening.
Their own prayers and,
yeah.
and listening. So that's one extreme that I think is really cool. But at the very least, like you're saying, just making more availability for confession, because if in an average parish we have between maybe 500 people or some large parishes with 1,000 or more people, the confession lines are still 4 or 5 people
yeah.
on a week. That should not be the case. We're not all supposed to be optimists that like, yeah, no one in this parish is committing mortal sins.
Yeah, right.
No, we need to recognize like probably many, many more people should not be receiving communion than they are. And I'm not trying to make this super negative, but like it's we kind of need a reality check to realize we need to, if we want to have more devotion to the Eucharist, and we're currently in the midst of a Eucharistic revival in
yes.
our country, if we want to have more devotion to the Eucharist, then we need to start by recognizing the need for repentance.
Yes.
And the fact that we need to prepare before we can start falling in love with the
and
Eucharist.
So witnessing that ourselves, I think,
mm-hmm.
like, certainly, like, it's the priest's job from the pulpit, right, to tell people that.
Yes.
Right? Is it our job, and this is a question for you, like, I mean, as a monk, I'd say it's also another job. I'm representing the church in a more radical way.
Totally.
But, like, is it your job, like, just as a, you know, post-college grad, 21-year-old, you know, worker, like, in the pew next to you, the church does say we can never just, unless someone has straight up told us, we can never just assume someone's state of their soul.
Sure.
But like, I don't know, how do you approach both your own growth in piety and reverence
mm-hmm.
and calling other people to it without it necessarily being condemning, but in some ways like condemnation is also okay
mm-hmm.
if it's, you know, saving them from worse things.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. One kind of example of this is I was talking to there was one of the guys who went on Alaska with us. His name's Dr. Eric Koshin. I'm actually hoping to have him on the podcast.
He's so
soon.
Cool, dude.
But at his parish, I was talking to him. We were having a beer recently, and he's like, "Yeah, I'm like the designated, like self-appointed communion police."
That's sick.
And I was like, "Oh, what do you mean?" He's like, "You know, I like wait at the back, and I watch people as they receive communion, and if someone doesn't." Just kind of hold it or they fiddle around with it or whatever. He said, I run up to them and say, like, are you Catholic? Or do you know what you're doing? And if they say no, he's like, give it back to me.
Mm-hmm.
Or they'll be like, yeah, I'm just like, it's been a long time since I've been to church. He'll say like, well, either consume it or give it back to me.
Mm-hmm.
He said he's found hosts in missals before,
mm-hmm.
Just on the floor, in the parking lot. He said he chased tons of people down at Christmas to like, give me back
the
host.
Oh, it's very common at Christmas and Easter. People
like,
don't know what they're doing.
And he said they receive, they walk.
They don't even have bad intention.
They
just don't know what they're doing.
Yeah. And he did say, he's like, now, he said, you might think that's a little crazy or I maybe shouldn't be doing that. And I was like, no.
If that sounds like crazy or like paranoia to you, you need to deepen in your devotion to the Eucharist because that's totally the appropriate response.
You're saving Jesus from crimes being committed against his sacred body.
Exactly. The Eucharist is the singular most precious substance on earth. And so... Just like you wouldn't, like, if you were at, like, a jewelry shop and you just saw someone walk in, like, look at, like, a ring, just put it in their pocket and kind of walk out, like, for one thing, you'd call the police, but like you would immediately track them down because, well, that's worth like thousands of dollars. Well, the Eucharist is of infinite value. You cannot put a price on it. So if you see someone mistreating it or not treating with the proper reverence, then it is not just your right, but it's actually your duty to seek them out and make things right.
So that's, and that can, one, and now some of those people might take it negatively or whatever, and that's like, you know, that's tough. Tough luck.
That's tough.
But for some people, he said he has one or two people, like, I've heard other stories of one or two people saying, like, they've done that, and the person's like, is it really that? Like, does it really mean that much? It was like, mm-hmm. is it really that important? And like, yes, it is, because this is what we believe. And then people have been like reconverted or have been like, oh, then I shouldn't receive it because I don't know what I'm doing.
Exactly.
Like, you're right. Take it back.
Again, many of them do not have bad intentions. There are some, actually, more than some people realize that there are people that, for example, I heard a story from a priest where he saw a lady take communion. She was about to walk out.
Yeah.
And then he went over to say, like, could you give me Jesus back? And then she started trying to put a hex on him. Like, she was like some sort of local witch. Mm. So some people do have bad intent, but many of them, it's not bad intentions. It's just ignorance.
Yes.
And if you provide that moment of possible conversion for them by showing them your devotion to the Eucharist, that's actually huge.
So how do you then provide that opportunity and show that devotion?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, a few years ago, I remember there was a similar instance at Christmas Mass where a dude was just walking out. So like, had to go track him down afterwards, like, hey, did you receive that? And he's like, receive? Like, he wasn't even familiar with, like, the verb that we use for communion. So we're like, okay, give us Jesus back. But anyway, most of the time, I guess I don't have to do anything like that. In my experience, though, one really easy way we can grow in devotion to the Eucharist, but also prevent possible mistreatment of the Eucharist, is just our posture of receiving.
Mm-hmm.
So, it was really wonderful. I got to go to a college where we had a communion rail. And so everyone receives kneeling, and they receive on the tongue. Now, for one thing, when you do that, you enter a state and a posture of total vulnerability. So it immediately humbles you, and you recognize, this is a posture I do not take at any other moment in my life.
Yes.
So this immediately gives me attention and informs my body, even before it informs my mind, it informs my body that something special is going on. But then in addition to that, when you receive on the tongue, it's much harder to mistreat it or to have liabilities, like someone trying to take the Eucharist and walk out of church with it or go leave it in a pew somewhere.
Although I have heard stories of someone, they perceive it on their tongue as a ruse and then take it out of their mouth.
That's possible. It's
but
definitely possible.
Probably a lot less common.
But it's less common, I think. So I think, honestly, the more we encourage people to receive on the tongue, and I think receive kneeling, the more it inspires devotion. We kind of sometimes forget that what we do with our bodies affects what we do with our souls or what happens in our souls. But we are as these weird composites that God's made where we have both body and soul. What happens in our souls affects our bodies, but what happens in our bodies also affects our souls.
Yes.
So if we receive in a reverent posture, it really, I think, can contribute to just internal devotion to the Eucharist.
And, you know, and Jesus talks about that. He says, don't be afraid of him who can just kill the body, but not the soul. Mm-hmm. Like a man, you know, a person, a soldier who cuts your head off.
Right.
But rather be afraid of the one who can kill the body and the soul in Gehenna.
Mm-hmm.
So that there are things then that we do that can have a double effect upon us. And how we would treat the Eucharist, I would say, is probably the absolute, like, greatest example of that. Like, either worthy reception of it versus unworthy, indifferent reception versus attentive.
Absolutely.
I guess I didn't really think about that kind of that posture of vulnerability. I do think, like, because like back and forth, sometimes about like posture, like, okay, I've had some people come back and say like, well, like, I 100% believe that's Jesus. I desperately desire to receive him. Like, but I receive him on the hand because that's like what I'm comfortable with, what I'm raised with. I did actually have one like priest say that. It's like, oh yeah, some of these people, they tell me like, that's the best way to do it. And I just like, it's like, that's how I was raised. And I kind of want to come back and say like, they're not spitting on the way you're raised.
No,
they're not spitting on anything. They're showing that, like, look, this is reflective of something different, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're not saying, like, oh, how everything that you've learned or taught is bogus. No, they're trying to foster more devotion, right?
Mm-hmm.
So people who take these things personally also.
Yeah.
And I'm not, you know, I don't. That's not necessarily. I do receive on the tongue. I don't receive kneeling. But I have at times, and I understand that. But my thought is, like, okay, Jesus as... if you watch The Chosen, they quote this a lot, but this is how the Jews prayed. But like, praise are you, Lord, King of the universe,
mm-hmm.
right? King of the universe. Yeah. What do you do when you come into a king's presence? You genuflect
you
at least.
You stand and you walk up to him like he's a normal guy. No, you kneel. You kneel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's an earthly king.
Exactly.
Right? So the king of the universe, God, I mean, yes, we should be kneeling. I mean, mm-hmm. it does make sense to me. And now, mm-hmm. again, people extrapolate on these things and say like, oh, well, if you do that, you therefore don't believe in the Second Vatican Council. Mm-hmm. You hate Pope Francis.
Mm-hmm.
You think that all these priests should be kicked out. Like, all of these things. Oh, my goodness.
We're not saying any of that.
No. Stop. Just like I would not say, oh, you receive in the tongue, therefore you think we should consecrate Doritos.
You mean you receive on the hand. Yeah,
yeah. If you receive on the hand, you should consecrate Doritos. That you think that drums should be at every mass.
Yeah.
And that priests can be married. Like, I know you don't support that either. So
exactly.
I don't extrapolate. So don't extrapolate from that either.
Right.
Sorry, I don't know.
No,
I don't
I know
that
you
got
mean,
us anywhere.
No,
but
it is helpful not to. We shouldn't assume that someone who has a different opinion from us espouses all other extreme opinions that might be associated with
yes.
that one.
And but. Me receiving on the tongue and kneeling, if I do it, or if you do it, or we see others, it's also about their relationship with receiving Jesus. Yes, mm-hmm. it's an external witness, but it's about how they can be reverent.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if, you know.
Well, I agree with that. And I do sympathize with the point of view some people have where they say, look, I was raised a certain way. Like, I grew up receiving communion in a certain way, and so that's comfortable for me. Part of the reason I receive kneeling and on the tongue at this point is because having done it for a few years, now that's what I'm comfortable with.
Yeah.
It's familiar with me.
Exactly.
Familiar to me. So familiarity is a legitimate feeling, but sometimes you have to kind of rise above individual experience and individual feelings and recognize, okay, what's better though for the church as a whole? And I think as a whole, even though some people can receive with great reverence in their hearts, standing and on the hand, I think as a general institution, receiving kneeling, receiving on the tongue fosters deeper zeal. And again, there are exceptions. There are individual people's experience where they feel like just doing this,
mm-hmm.
I shouldn't say just doing this, like it sounds a little diminutive, but they feel like doing this really is an expression of devotion and piety. But as a whole, I don't think it contributes to devotion and piety.
Hmm.
And I think it lends itself to like abuses where people receive on the hand and then close their hand and walk out with Jesus, and either out of just ignorance or with bad intention. So this is not necessarily his view, but at least it's my view.
Yeah.
That I think the more you foster or encourage people to receive in that certain posture, that more traditional posture, the more you're going to foster devotion to the Eucharist.
I do need to reflect on that because, yeah. And again, like I come up with a lot of individual examples mm-hmm. that like might counter that, but a collection of individuals still does not counter right. a generality, mm-hmm. right? So I don't know. I have to think about that. Like he said, it's not necessarily my opinion, but I do hear it, and I can see the reasoning behind it.
And even when it was introduced, I think at Vatican II, as kind of a new available posture for receiving communion, it was introduced as not the ordinary one, but kind of the irregular, abnormal form of receiving communion.
One counter. This is like maybe the last like little side tangent, but like some people will say like, well, back in like the ancient church, they did it more like the Last Supper, where like the piece of unleavened bread was passed from one person to the mm-hmm. other, and they ripped off a piece. Mm-hmm. And actually, they would rip off two pieces. Like the head of the family would rip off two pieces. Heard about this? Father Cyprian taught us like ancient liturgies. The head of the family would rip off two pieces. So one he would keep and take home, so they would have a little tabernacle in their home to reverence the Eucharist, and then they would receive the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, well, so they were receiving on the hand. It was a precedent.
Mm-hmm.
He said, but somewhere along the line, when there weren't these home churches anymore, and it wasn't like the families that
you weren't
Jesus
eating in
was,
the catacombs.
Yes, and Jesus was specified to a tabernacle, he says, right. is where these things changed. So
mm-hmm.
there is some understanding and like some basis for both,
mm-hmm.
right? But I guess the real question is, what fosters both your deeper belief, as C.S. Lewis says, right, higher up and deeper in, like we can always
further up and further,
further
in.
Up
yeah.
and further in our belief in the Eucharist. What fosters that more deeply for you? Maybe it's some of these things, and how can you witness it for others?
Mm-hmm.
I think a great sign of hope, though, is just like, yes, there are way less Catholics going to Mass than there was, right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially after COVID, we saw so many go and never come back. The ones who come back, I see, are the ones who are there because of Jesus.
Absolutely.
So I do think the ones who are in church are more reverent.
And they're generally the ones who believe in the real presence.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think many of of the people from that poll. That poll was taken, interestingly, I think in 2019,
yes,
the year before
COVID. Yeah.
And it said, you know, only 30% of Catholics believe in the real presence. Well, I'm guessing many of those 70% who don't believe in the real presence simply never went back to church after COVID. That's why they feel empty now. But maybe, you know, say, I think Pope Benedict, I think, predicted that the church in the end times is going to be smaller in numbers, but it's going to be more vibrant and more alive than ever. So we might have fewer people coming to Mass, simply because people who used to come to Mass but didn't really believe are no longer coming.
Yeah.
And so the ones, I think we are going to have an uptick and a general improvement in our church over the coming years in both, you know, devotion and zeal for the Eucharist.
Yeah. So defend Jesus and the belief in the real presence.
Mm-hmm.
If someone mocks it or someone in any way, right? Don't let, like,
don't be shocked,
the instance
call them out
of the Paris Olympics be something that just goes by. Yeah, don't be like, how could you ever say that? Because that's just the world that has been bred. But, like, come back to with
mm-hmm.
truth.
Mm-hmm. So, and if someone tries to walk out of Mass with the Eucharist, tackle them. No, not tackle them, because you don't want the Eucharist to break. But you know,
save Jesus.
Yeah, save Jesus. It's worth it.
Great.
Okay.
Thanks, bud.
Yeah.
Good to be with you.
Yeah, bro.
As always.
We got to work on how you dab people up. So it's like this.
Well, I wasn't dabbing you up. I was just trying to go for the handshake.
Okay, gotcha.
All right. Adios.
Peace.